Welcome to Front Row Geeks, episode 9. So I need to start with an apology, because even though I am definitely going to make 3 episodes a month, like I promised, I'm going to have to put out 2 in 1 week. So yeah, double stacking. This one's coming out here this Wednesday, and we got another one coming up no later than this Saturday, which is going to be good, another of our team meetings here. But yeah, but other than that, man, life has been really busy, and thank you so much, everybody, for listening to the podcast. I see that we got a lot of new listeners, so I'm really grateful that you guys gave us a listen. Hope you can stick around. We got a lot of growing here to do. We got a lot more interesting people to talk to. So tune in. 3 a month, I promise. I'll try to spread them out a little bit more, but we're going to get 3 a month for sure. And in the future, there's going to be even more than that. Got a lot of exciting stuff coming up, so keep posted. Biggest thing coming up here pretty soon is David and I. David, you'll know from the Twitch channel, and number 2 in our podcast empire. We're going to GDC this week, and we'll record an episode up there and release it sometime next month. But we'll let you know how GDC is before and after. That's what I plan to do. It'll be his first GDC, and it'll be my 8th. So we'll kind of talk about what we expect to see, and then we'll have a little post-mortem. So we'll have a whole GDC trip episode slated for sometime next month. So stay tuned for that. And today, just moving on to today's episode, we're with Chris Pings. And Chris Pings, if you don't know who he is, I know who he is. He's one of my best friends. Interviewed him because two important reasons why I interviewed him. One, he's one of the greatest guys I know. He gives so much back to Tucson and his community, and he's always been an inspiration for that since I've known him. And that's one of the biggest reasons why I talked to him. His stories about how he gives back to the community, how he stays involved and all that, on top of everything else he does, we get into it. And in addition to that, one day soon he should be joining us on this network. He's really gotten into tabletop and board games, and pretty recently. We've all kind of played board games all entire lives, but particularly he's got some connections, and he's pretty much my go-to guy if I want to know whether a board game is worth playing or not, because he's seen them all one by one. So I'm hoping to bring him on to the network, Front Row Geek Network, to talk a little bit more about that. Eventually we'll give him his own show, and we'll see him here and there pretty soon once we get that set up for him. So yeah, he's one of the future projects, so this is going to be a great introduction to who he is. He's, again, one of the greatest guys, and I love him. He knows I love him. I promise I wouldn't cry when I did this. So before I do, I'm going to go ahead and just start the podcast. Okay, go.
Welcome to Front Row Geeks.
Say often in life. Right. I mean, I've been doing this wrong this whole time. Right. I am so sorry.
Well, at least it's not like you already did this for like 5 years and then you did it and you're like, well, damn it.
There aren't a lot of things I've been doing for 5 years. So maybe I don't have to worry about that just yet. I'll let you know how that goes if it comes up in conversation.
Yes.
Because remember that one time we talked about messing something up for a long amount of time? Happened to me again. It was worse than a microphone.
This one was 10 years, and I'm never allowed back into an office, Max.
All this time wasted. All those times in the editing booth, I was wondering, this is good enough, right? Right? Okay.
This'll work.
So when was the last... You didn't wear the pink suit. You forgot. You wrote it on your own calendar.
It's sitting in there right there. I thought I was going out to your place, so I was like starting to think about it and have it set.
Why would you think that? I have nowhere to interview people. That was my parents.
The dog's not mad at me. The dog's mad at Heffley. It wouldn't have barked the whole time. Well, I can go grab the pink suit. No, I'm going to go grab it real
quick. No. I've seen the pink suit. I was there at its inception.
So, yes, so yeah, as it was created.
So, I mean, when was the last time you used it?
Last time that I used it was last year for the Susan G. Komen 5K in March. So usually I'll find, or actually I take that back. I can't remember the date, but they do a Think Pink fashion show on campus, which was the original reason that we bought it, was to participate in the show, and they had me judging this year, so I judged in the pink tuxedo.
And I feel like I should already know this. Is it the same one, or have you changed it since?
No, it is still the same suit. One. I'm probably not far off from having to buy another one, because we're coming up on almost 6 years on this one now.
I mean, you do run in it. Has it seen wear and tear?
It has, yeah.
I've had
a couple of spots on the pants that have had to be re-sewn. I've had the pants re-hemmed at the top 2 times. The jacket's had tears in it. So the people I take it to dry clean with are like, what do we have to fix this time? Every time I take it back.
I'm incredibly jealous. I don't have the same clothes. The same clothes I had 6 years ago I can't wear today. Thanks.
Well, so the other thing, it's not really normal fabric. Right? You have to remember, it's almost like plastic.
I mean, I never touched a suit. And obviously I never wore it. So I have no idea what quality we got you when we bought you.
It's a miracle running for that thing in 3 miles that I'm not dead by the end of that race. Because it's like running in a plastic bag.
Oh, God.
It's the most synthetic fiber I've ever owned, aside from like a windbreaker.
It was really cheap compared to what it could have been. So I guess that's no surprise.
A pink 3-piece tuxedo for under $150 is probably not going to be top of the line.
You know, I don't think that company lasted, because I can't find that website anymore.
Probably doesn't exist anymore.
I want a red one for that. I was like, when sign me up?
They sold us the one suit and then it stopped.
They're like, guys, we have a sale. What? No, we don't have this. No one ever buys off of us.
Is that Jim again? You're messing with us, Jim. We're not sending
it. Not this time. I'm not going to spend this month's budget on making a fake suit, Jim. Wait, what? His name is Chris? We don't know Chris.
Holy crap, someone actually bought something.
Oh my God. Everybody, we're saved!
For 2 more weeks. Darn.
Sorry, Bob, we had to shut you down. But we just sold one. No.
But yeah, it's probably going to be close within another year or so that I'm going to need to buy another one. And I think this one, just given the involvement with Komen that I still have, I'll probably get one that fits just a little bit better than this one does. This one, if I'm lucky now, I fit in a 38 regular for a suit jacket. That thing was a 44 wide.
Wow.
Yeah, it's huge.
How do we screw that up? Or is it just one size?
It was the closest to what would fit when we bought it. And we had it. I had the sleeves brought up, and I had the shoulders brought in a little bit. But it was large enough that they said, if you want me to do this as a fitting to you, I'm basically remaking this jacket, and it's not going to cost nearly what you're expecting to pay. Okay, we'll just leave it big then.
It was a gimmick.
Yeah, it served its purpose, so, and it still does.
If you buy a new one, are you going to have to find one that says you can run in me? What does that mean? Or another cheap suit?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it gets used for running once a year, and then the rest of the year it's events. Like, I'll go to be at events as a Komen sponsor.
I wonder if Pee Wee Herman had this problem.
Yeah, I don't know, the nice gray suit for everything. But I probably wouldn't go too expensive, because there are some venues that we go to that it's not going to stay clean. Like, we did Tucson Speedway this year, and so when we were out there,
is that the race, the NASCAR thing, right?
Yes, yeah. We're.
I couldn't go.
So I wasn't aware until we got out there, but it's a NASCAR home track again. So they have races that are going on down there during the season and everything that's going on. But I guess the night that we went down there, the trophy girls decided not to show up on that Saturday night. So, of course, they asked the guy in the full pink tuxedo if he'd go down
and
show a little leg and hand the trophies out.
You're the most girlish thing out here. Go out there for us.
Go on. But so every time that a race would finish, they didn't really have a spot that you could just walk onto the track. If we wanted to get onto the track, once races were going on and vehicles were down there, they had a ladder. And so they opened a gate, they put this like 5-step ladder down to the track, and then we had to go down the ladder to get onto the track every time. So after like the third race, my sleeves were just like black up the sides from the ladder.
Your suit isn't pink. Fraud.
He's got racing stripes. He's getting in the spirit.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I may go a little more expensive than that one would probably be, but, you know.
How long did it take before, like, it struck with anybody? Because I remember the stories just getting grander and grander as the years went by.
I think the best one, you remember Joe?
Yeah.
So, one of the years that I was running the race, I happened to end up next to Joe. And so, Joe and I were talking as we were running. And he was like, so what have you been up to, man? You doing any other races? You doing anything like that? And I happened to mention to him, this was like 3 or 4 months after I had run the Tucson Half Marathon in a business suit. Like just a suit jacket, dress shirt, tie, slacks kind of thing.
I remember that one.
And so I was telling Joe about that. And a guy like 3 people back from us went, that was you? And I think that was probably one of the first times where I was like, okay, there's just this random guy in a suit that's just continually showing up all over the place, running these races for some reason.
Little did he know it was for no reason at all.
At that point, nope. It didn't really end up having a reason until a year ago now.
When was it that picture of you was drawn? Because that one was based on when you wore just a business suit, right? There's that like that drawing of you that you have as like a avatar on stuff.
Oh yes, so the drawing, that one, my buddy Jacob Lauderdale, we went up and did the Toro. I don't have the shirt on. I had it on.
Yeah, Ice Squirrel.
Yes, I had my Toro Loco Challenge shirt on when I was working out in the yard today. But there was a race that they used to do up. If you headed toward Phoenix, right past Picacho Peak, just where like those orchards are with all the trees and everything, they did a race a couple of years up there called the Toro Loco Challenge. And so Jacob and I went up and did it. But of course, I had to go in a suit. I couldn't just go up and run the mud run. So as we finished the race and we're back out in the parking lot, I'm standing there covered in mud. And I've got my hands sort of on the lapels of the jacket, and I just look at him, and I'm just kind of smiling, and he takes the picture. And so eventually, I don't know if you've ever heard of the website Fiverr.
No.
You can go on there, and there's a gazillion people that you can ask to do things for $5.
Wait, and they don't troll you?
No.
Oh. Well, this is not
$5. I mean, if it was $1, sure, they'd do whatever they want. But
like those pictures, like show the sun between my fingers, and yeah,
and it's like
everything but that.
Yeah, I chose to go that route instead of just putting it on 4chan.
Good job. Wise decision.
Yes. So there was a woman on there that would take a photo that you had, and she would do that sort of colorization and that care like pop characterization of it. So I was like, I'll give it a shot. So I threw it on there, and then she emailed me back and was like, well, is there a particular color you want in the back? I was like, based on what I've got on, I'll leave it to your discretion. So she probably could have trolled me. She could have just been rainbow or something.
The more you know, simple.
Yeah. Couple of gorillas in the back, just, you know, whatever she wanted to do. But so she did the green background, and once I finally got it back, I was like, all right, this was worth $5. And then I put it on every avatar that I have.
You found the one nice person on the internet. Congrats.
Yes, yeah.
She has since died, probably.
Yeah. If I had an Xbox, that would have been an achievement to get that. Or maybe Steam has it. I'm sure there's a TF2 achievement for finding a nice person on the internet.
You found someone nice. Good for you. Just quit now.
I'm sure it's just an addition to the Conga achievements that they've had recently.
Have a Conga achievement now?
There's some... I haven't really messed with any of it, but I guess there's something where you can have... Well, it's not really cutscenes, but like where the taunting and things like that... Mm-hmm. You can make them do things like conga or dance or things like that.
Adorable.
Yeah.
I haven't played that in like a year.
Yeah.
Backlog. I talked to you about that.
Oh, yes.
Never gonna get that done.
The never-ending backlog. I'm just waiting for No Man's Sky at this point. I think that's finally going to be the reason that I buy a PS4.
Yeah, I'll play that in about 2020.
Yeah.
That's when I'll get to that one. Just let me know how it goes.
Yes. I still won't have found anybody by the time you start playing.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, I think you're doing well. You and someone else have talked up that game a lot.
Yeah,
and I'll probably hear all about it at GDC when I go.
Oh yeah, weeks. I can bet.
In fact, I should probably look to see if someone's doing a session on it. That'd be really cool. I'll let you know if that happens.
Yes.
So
on the algorithm and everything.
So with all of the pink suit running,
mm-hmm.
how did that translate to now working for the season Susan B. Komen?
So, I guess what was it? It was the fourth year that I ran the race. About 2 or 3 weeks after the race, a photo of me showed up on Susan G. Komen's Facebook page down here for Southern Arizona, and it had a couple of sentences underneath it, and it just said, "Does anybody know this man? We're trying to find him. Like, anybody that can give us contact information."
He's wearing a pink suit. It can't be that hard.
Like, yeah, there's got to be someone that can find this guy. And so I get home, and at this point I had not seen that yet, because, of course, nobody tagged me in the photo or anything. So at that point I hadn't seen it. I get home, and Chelsea's sitting on the couch, and she just leans over, looks at me, and she was like, "You're blowing up Facebook right now." I was like, what?
No.
So one of Chelsea's friends that she went through the master's program with saw it and recognized me and told Chelsea. So then Chelsea told me, so I contacted the executive director over there for the Southern Arizona affiliate. And so, you know, it was the, you found me, here you go.
I'm sorry.
I hope I'm not in trouble for something.
I accept whatever punishment.
Yes. Yeah, it was definitely.
You don't want this suit. You really don't want it.
Right, it was definitely one of those. I hope that I didn't do anything I wasn't supposed to at the race. But she was like,
"Oh God!"
But she was like, "No. We wanted to see if maybe we could do some promotional stuff with you. More and more people are like, who's that guy in the pink suit? That type of thing." So I thought, "Oh, cool." So we happened to meet, and first we just went and got tea somewhere and sat for a little bit, and we were talking. And the more that she found out about my work at the university and my work with another nonprofit here in town, the Sonoran Center for Leadership Development, it sort of became more than just the discussion on doing promotional things.
You
it was
do
like,
more
oh,
than wear pink suits.
Oh, you're an accountant? Oh, we have a board position for you.
Pink suits and you can do math? Come on in.
You're in. But it was kind of interesting right at the get-go, because I think everybody did just kind of see it as, this guy's just a gimmick. But then when I actually got in there and I was looking at the financials and I was, you know, starting to play around and look at things a little more, they were like, oh, he's not just running around in a pink suit. He's actually going to do something.
Isn't it like a metaphor for that? It's not just a pretty face.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It's not just a pretty face or a pretty suit.
That, and I kind of got thrown into it. Our budgeting cycle is the first like 3 months of the year, and I got accepted onto the board at the end of January. So within like a week and a half of me getting accepted on the board, I was helping with the budget for the next year. So it was
we need real help.
I was like, the suit's wonderful, but get in here. We need you on a calculator.
Pink calculator?
Like, yeah,
it's a theme. It was either that or one that shaped as surviving breasts, but we thought the pink one was more tactful.
there's enough people in the office that would be offended, so we just painted this one pink.
we do have Jim. You know, you remember Jim from the previous example. Yeah. He likes to write 8008 on the pink calculator, and that kind of fills his void. But you know, don't do that.
Jim's gonna do Jim, and that's fine.
Individuality here is we approve.
It's strong. But yeah, so I mean, from there on, you know, it's been events, board meetings. We did a regional conference a few months ago now, and so I got to see some of my counterparts from other parts of the Western region. So, you know, it's been that's been a really fun opportunity.
So, how does that change it all for you? Because I mean, it's I've known you forever. This is going to be easy. This is going to be easy and the hardest interview because I have to ask you questions like I don't already know the answer.
Like you're going to get some different surprise answer,
which some I already have. So hey, maybe this works somehow. We're just going to communicate like this forever from now on.
Yes, yeah.
Chris, don't talk to me. Let's get a microphone in front of us.
This is just how it's going to happen every time from now.
And action. So, yeah, this was what I remember. Correct me if I'm wrong, best friend here. It was about running for you, you know, just that a lot of people like to run, fitness, feel good, you know, a little bit of competitive thing. Mm-hmm. That's natural. We got you into the pink suit for the gimmick for that show, fashion show.
Yeah.
And then you put the chocolate and peanut butter together there. So how do you reconcile that with your life? How did you go from that point A to point Z?
So part of that kind of has to start with, it started in my sophomore year of college. I ran track when I was in high school for 1 year. I did sprinting, and I stopped after my freshman year because I did not get along with my coach, and I just decided I didn't want to do it anymore. So I really hadn't run for almost 5 years. And sophomore year, my roommate Andy, he was getting ready to go on a 5-mile run, and he was like, come on, you're going to go with me. He like, coaxed me out of the apartment, like, come on, we're leaving, we're going. So we went out, and I started running with him, and I was just like, I'm moving along, and I was keeping up with him, but it felt like a struggle. And I was like, why does it feel like such a struggle? And I didn't know. And then come to find out, I've been running in basketball shoes the whole time. I basically got cement on my feet as I'm running with him.
Okay, I am naive to this. It makes that much of a difference?
So the next set of shoes that I got was a set of trail running Tevas. And the first time we went out when I had those new shoes on, I was gone. Just the stamina that was there because I had that much less weight on my feet, I was gone. And so after that, wow. I was like, okay, I can do this again now.
It took shoes?
That was all it took. Oh. And so
you've just legitimized all shoe commercials.
like, don't run in basketball shoes. Actually buy running shoes.
I care now. Like,
wow. It really does make a difference. So then shortly thereafter, I ran my first half marathon, and I want to say it was like 2 hours and 18 minutes, which I thought it was going to be like 3 hours. And I came in at that and I was like, well, what? So at this point, my PR for a half marathon is still 2 hours and 5 minutes. And the only reason that it ended up being over 2 hours, I ended up having to make a restroom break because I should not have eaten what I ate for breakfast that morning. or I should have eaten it earlier. So
don't Taco Bell for you.
Yeah, no.
Late night Taco Bell, yeah. Not a good breakfast.
Never a good thing. Never a good thing. But I ate a little too close to the start, and it came
was
back.
It something Mexican? Because it's okay if you admit that.
It was not. It was not.
It wasn't?
No. It was just mixed with my anxiety for the race and then eating too close to the start that when I got about like 10 miles, or no, not 10, when I got about like 7-8 miles in, all of a sudden it was like, no, I had to stop.
Did you run faster?
To get to where I was going for that extra like half mile, as soon as I could see that blue in sight, I was gone.
Look at that pink suit guy. Pre-pink suit, but damn, look at that. Or was it pink suit?
No, at that point it was just in running gear. 2 hours and 5 minutes.
That guy's fast.
Yeah. Well, and then I guess the thing that got me into the running in other items when they did the inaugural Mount Lemmon marathon and half marathon, I did the half. I made the mistake of not really training for it. I still ended up doing okay. I got, like, at least for myself, I felt that was okay for not really training for it. I did 2 hours and, like, 27 minutes or something like that. But it was the very first...
I was impressed.
Yeah, I was running from Windy Point to Summer Haven. Right? That was a terrible race. It was beautiful. It was gorgeous.
What time of year?
I felt awful by the end of the race. We'll just leave it at that. But,
but what time of year was it?
Oh, when was it? I think it was in November.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. Or, no, it couldn't have been November, because there would have been snow up there. It wasn't summer, so it must have been somewhere in between.
You weren't boiling, so...
Right.
Okay.
I did do one in the evening in June, the Kitt Peak Ascent. I did that one. That was 10 miles to the top of Kitt Peak, and we started at, like, 5:30 p.m. in June, and it was... just absolutely god awful. But I ended up taking third in my age range in that one, which I was like, were there only three of us? You can be honest.
I mean, were there two of you? And,
and I still got third. But fortunately, it was out of like seven. So I was like, well, that makes me feel a little bit better about it.
You're still crazy for doing it.
Right. But when we were doing the Mount Lemmon half marathon, as we were running up, when I got down to the last, like, 3 miles, I had a guy pass me in a Luigi costume as we were running the race.
Nice.
And as he came up on me, I was like, it was the same type of thing. I was like, dude, kudos. This is sweet. You're up here running this. He was like, you know, it's not that much more training. I run with a hoodie on. I do this. I do that. And it's not much more to train to be able to do something like this. And it makes it so much more fun for everybody that's around. So I was like, you know, I think this guy's on to something.
He got attention. I want attention. Just kidding.
Hey, I'll be the spotlight. I don't mind.
Let's see. Do I have something that I don't care about that I can wear?
<There's>... Leftover suits. That has been another sort of weird thing, especially with... So in total, for all of the races that I've run in business suits... I've gone through four
different suits.
Yeah,
three besides the pink one.
Correct. Yeah, like that, and it's always just saber suits, but I will take the time to try and get them to match still, where it's not just like a tweed jacket and black pants. Like I'll actually try and get them to match at least somewhat, so it looks like a normal suit.
You still have fashion sense, except for the sense of, you know, not ruining the suit and running, but
right. God. And when I did the half marathon in the business suit, just some of the responses that I got from people as we were running, like as they would pass by me, like, oh man, you must be really late for work. Oh, car broke down, huh? She must be a lucky lady. And I didn't really understand that one at first. And then
I don't get that one either.
About 5 minutes later, I realized it was like, oh, I'm running to my wedding. That's why he said that. Like someone was almost going to have to explain
yet?
That. No, I haven't.
I wouldn't have gotten that. I'm imagining you in like a brown like business suit when you're doing that run. It's like, why would you say that?
Yeah. You know what would be a fun one to do a tux in is the downtown 5K.
Oh, okay.
That'd be a fun one.
I don't know what that is.
They do one down there. It goes down through one of the historical neighborhoods downtown, just a little 3 mile.
If there was a meter of how much running I've done in my life, I'm pretty sure I'm the negatives, Chris. If I'm in the positives, only because I did the bubble dash with you, and that was really not running.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
That was the sketchiest bubble party I think that I've ever seen.
Was it sketchy?
At the end.
I feel like it could have been sketchier.
It totally could have been sketchier, but it was still so sketchy.
It was, okay, yeah. I mean,
it was just...
Okay, let's describe this, because this is one of those things, again, where we already know what we're talking about.
Right, so imagine an empty Walmart parking lot, but there's no Walmart there. And instead of streetlights, there's just four spotlights on this weird contraption that's just spewing bubbles out like a small Niagara Falls.
It was a fun party, Chris.
It was.
Only without any of the fun bits, at least that I saw, of the fun party.
Right. And a DJ that was just...
Yeah, I don't remember the DJ, which is probably a sign.
Yeah. But the run itself was fun. Those guys that had to be on acid or something, they kept...
Ah, yeah!
every time we'd come around the corner, I had the circular lights on my arm so that it looked like I was just lighting up in the night.
Wait, was that the precursor to your Mr. Freeze costume? Is that what you were doing there? Or it just happened to be like,
I had neon those left over from my Mr. Freeze costume.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we were already past it at that point. Yeah,
I had
the leftover lighting from my Mr. Freeze costume that I just wrapped around my arms.
Again, Chris had to gain attention. Look at me, I'm glowing.
The lights.
It's not like we're in a neon bubbled. Oh, never mind. Yes, we are.
Oh, wait, this works. Okay.
Oh, right. You're fine. You're legitimate.
It's reasonable.
But yeah, I mean, I think we regrettably took pictures in the foam. I remember because
we did at the start line. Yeah.
Well, in the foam, too, because I remember that pretty much all I achieved, besides a picture that I don't even think I posted anywhere, was that my shorts were wet and I had to get in my car later.
Oh, yes.
So I didn't. Yeah. That was my achievement. I was like, okay. I have wet shorts.
And
fun.
Then when we were out up at the bar and we ran into Pat, and what did he call me? He called me a Brian, wasn't it?
I don't remember. He called you what?
He didn't call me Chris.
Oh, yeah, remember? Sorry. I thought you were making like something else.
No.
I thought you were referencing something when he said that. No, yeah, you're right. I called you the wrong name.
Yeah.
Brian, just, what's up, Brian?
Just played it off. I was like, how you doing, man?
What's up? What's even up?
The next day, I got the message. I'm so sorry.
So the question was, because I don't know the second part to it, was he drunk?
No, it was just drunk. Because he immediately the next morning, it was like, I'm so sorry. We'd been there for like 2 hours already. Like,
you know what? It was because you ran in the Brian costume that one year, Chris. We told you not to do it. Now you're stereotyped.
Now all of a sudden, everyone's just looking for the big white floppy ears and everything.
Who smokes and talks about his book all the time.
Yes, yeah. So I guess I earned that one.
Oh, I remember that. Because we met those girls, too. Well, I did. Not you, me.
Yes.
I'm still friends with that girl, so.
Good. Man, we were trying to push you so hard to do
that. You didn't push me that hard. I only needed a little convincing.
You just needed
to be sociable.
Just the small push. We were worried you weren't going to do anything, though. Yeah. We really were.
Now I have a podcast, so I'm doing stuff.
So it works.
I'm talking to other people now. You see where it's grown? I can talk to people now, including you. Yes. We can talk now for reals.
Yes. Super frenzies.
And then, let's see, the next part that I remember... Well, we jumped ahead, I guess, a little bit from when we talked about the bubble dash. What have you done since with the foundation now that you're kind of... Knee deep in there? Yeah, knee deep.
Yeah, that's close enough. So I do have a role on the board of directors beyond just being a director at large. When I came onto the board, I was just a member at large, and then within a couple of months, I became the treasurer elect. So we still had a treasurer, but I was kind of in learning mode. And then as of this past November, I became just true treasurer. So.
Cool.
Watching finances, congrats. Doing the updates during board meetings, all that jazz.
Does it take a lot of your time up? Is it a big part of what you do now?
It's something that's always on my radar when we've got things that are going on, when we've got updates that need to happen, when we've got events that are going on. So right now is a busy time because we've got the race coming up in March. So there's just a lot of expenses coming out the door, donations coming in the door, that type of thing. So it's more that needs to be observed and more that the board has to be updated on so that they can know where we're at with ticket sales, where we're at with, you know, participants, donations in relation to last year, that type of thing.
So I imagine that many have probably heard the name Susan B. Komen. I mean, it's a well-known name, I imagine. I mean, it's just because I went to the U of A and that was plastered everywhere. Well, it was Susan B. Komen. Yeah. Hey, I'll edit this out. What are you saying?
G.
Did I say B?
G. Komen.
Jeez. Maybe I won't edit that part out. That's just even how stupid I am. Okay, so maybe we don't know about it. I'm not even get the name right. Oh my god.
Well, so
I don't research for these things, Chris. I just ask questions.
Well, and so just as an idea,
By the way, that was terrible. You could have done way better.
Well, and I guess now that I think about it, that's a G from my side. That's not a G from your side. So we're both on the hook for that one.
I would have gone something. No, that's six. So
we're. That's right. We're both on the hook for that one.
Why couldn't it be B? It'd be easier.
But I guess just kind of as some context for the group here that I'm a part of, as far as what makes up the Southern Arizona affiliate, we're not just Pima County. We cover the six bottom counties of the whole state. And then the central and northern affiliate covers the rest of Arizona above the six counties that we cover. Yeah, so we have a pretty large area that we're visiting, working with, making sure that materials are available, information is available, grants are available to those different areas that if they send proposals in. So it's, and you know, it's just like any other nonprofit. The mission has a very good purpose, and those of us that are on the board are behind it 100% and want to achieve.
Okay, so now that I got the name totally wrong, I'm going to pretend now that I knew what I was talking about before, and I said that there's a side of the foundation that it seems to be well known. For me, it was always about their advocacy and then the relays. So, what do you see different about on your end now? Like what's opened up to you now? You're like, oh, okay, so this is something new about them that is inspiring or interesting.
Well, truthfully, in all honesty, before I got onto the board and actually started to see a lot of it, I really, you know, I knew they had the races, I knew that they had the 3-day events and that type of thing. I never really realized that they did things beyond putting materials out, like, and making information available.
Oh, really?
We have, depending on, well, I guess it's not depending, all of them have it, 75% of what we raise in Southern Arizona stays in Southern Arizona, as far as out giving research, treatment, grants to organizations in the area in order to prevent and fight and research breast cancer. In addition to that, the national office has their own set of grants and things that they provide. And we've recently had a $450,000 grant come to a researcher here at the University of Arizona. So even the money that doesn't stay here sort of makes its way back, because we do have people researching breast cancer at the University of Arizona.
Okay, so I guess what's interesting from what you just said then is that it's the foundation's more than just about raising the money and then giving it to someone else to use. You're telling me that the foundation actually actively finds a way to use this in the best way possible.
We do. We have our own committee of people that look through the grants on an annual basis to decide how we're going to distribute what money we have that we've raised to be able to continue to provide prevention and treatment and research services throughout Southern Arizona.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I already, you know, in naive thought before I was on the board, I really thought it was just the distribution of material and things like that, and then it all went to national grants. But that was an amazing thing to find out once I got on the board, was that so much of it was staying here.
So the program is really meant to support local communities as much, if not more,
correct, than just one national thing. Yeah, it's a lot of the grassroots in your community kind of thing, as opposed to just funneling it off somewhere else.
That's really cool to know. I thought they were pretty great organizations as far as putting the message out there, but to know that it's not as passive that's cool. And now you're part of it. That's cool. all in a weird cosmic way, you become part of it.
Yes. And another, just kind of another personal reason for continuing with my involvement and becoming so involved with all of it. In 2010, my mother passed away from ovarian cancer, and they have found some links between ovarian cancer and breast cancer as far as what could be causing it and how they grow and different things of that nature. And so it's been a personal thing to also be a part of that, to know that at some point it may be able to treat or prevent what my mom passed away from. So that is another piece of it.
Being active in that
Correct. Probably. Yeah, because it's a heck of a lot easier to find a organization that's working on breast cancer than it is on ovarian cancer. So at this point, at least right now, by putting my focus into this, I still have that, you know, mindset that I'm working toward something like that, even though it's not specifically ovarian cancer. But down the road, if I could find one, I would put the exact same effort into that exact thing if I found it.
Yeah, no, my family's seen that too. Yeah. So. Yeah, and more power to you for being so active in that. So, another part about being part of the foundation is that do you see anything firsthand about how far we've gone along with combating cancer?
You know, we get updates, we get affiliate updates, we get research updates, we get all those types of things. But it really falls to the same that you would see at most. Organizations that are trying to fight a disease, you know, we're working on it. We're one step closer.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't expect you're going to tell me breaking news here. Like, you know, actually, the other day I found out that we cured it all.
I've got this email right here.
We cured it all. It's all good.
But you know, it's always small steps. Somebody's found a new receptor that they think that they can use to prevent growth, or somebody's found a new inhibitor to stop it from appearing at all that they can use in preventative services if they think someone might be susceptible to it. So it's always just someone's got one new small step kind of thing.
Cool. Okay, so switching gears a little bit, I want to know about your involvement with Sonoran.
So right now, so the Sonoran Center for Leadership Development is a nonprofit here in Southern Arizona that's trying to focus on bringing one of the main goals is trying to bring leadership skills to those that would not have the affordability to get it otherwise. One of the things that we used to do would be offering for-profit workshops and things of that nature in order to provide low-cost or free workshops for those that wouldn't be able to get them on their own. So it was a very SE model for how we would...
I love SE.
Yes.
Social entrepreneurship.
For those that aren't aware. Yeah.
Probably
so
like a few people that actually probably use that phrase.
So it's in the past few years, it's expanded out from that, and we've created a subdivision of the nonprofit that's called the Sonoran College of Leadership. And we're currently getting ready to start working on a ISET accreditation, which would essentially allow us to give continuing education units, which, if you know what CPE is.
Not entirely.
For people like teachers, lawyers, accountants, anything of that nature, when they have to do continuing professional education, they can go to workshops and receive CPE. A CEU, or a continuing education unit, is a little more controlled than a CPE, and you have to have this accreditation in order to be able to give it out. So we're looking at working on getting that ISET certification, and then it will still essentially be the same idea, providing continuing education and CPE units at low cost so that people have that professional development available to them in the community.
So you work with both these organizations and you have a full-time job.
Yes.
Oh man, how do you do it all?
Well, in college I averaged like 4 to 5 hours of sleep a night. I can't do that.
I can't do that. I never did do that. So
I probably ruined some part of my body by doing that for like 3 or 4 years, but
I love your body, Chris. Sorry, Chelsea, it's true.
I'm not here to judge. But anymore, it comes down to schedules. I mean, it really is just trying to stick to schedules as much as I can. You know, a night for this, a night for that, a night for this, a night for that, that type of thing.
I mean, you and I talk about how we can possibly fit more things in all
right,
the time.
Right,
I mean,
yeah, business ventures and.
I'm half certain we tell that to each other just to keep ourselves sane.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
Like, okay, we're not crazy. Okay, it's okay that we don't have any time somehow, but we do, but we don't. I don't know.
And you want to talk about, you know, the busy, the on and off back-to-back conferences over the past 2 weeks. Like,
and then I'm going to eventually wrangle you into this podcast network.
Yes.
I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'm going to.
We'll figure it out.
You don't have free. You have more free time, obviously.
Yes, always.
You said 5 hours. Yeah, we can drop it down to three.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Three's okay.
Yeah, because aside from the two nonprofits, if we're just gonna lay all of it out on the table, aside from the two nonprofits, I serve on an event committee for Blair Charity Group in town as well.
I actually don't remember this one. Really?
So Joseph Blair, former basketball player from the University of Arizona, and also played in several different European leagues after leaving college, came back to the Tucson area, and he has a nonprofit that will hold basketball camps all over Southern Arizona for.
Oh yeah, I did meet this guy, then I didn't.
Like that, yeah. At some point,
at sure a dinner or barbecue sometime.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so we hold a couple of events in order for him to be able to fund those basketball camps a little bit. And so I serve on the event committee that helps with putting those events on as well. And then probably the smallest commitment of all of them, I'm on my HOA.
Wait, weren't you weren't you like a volunteer firefighter at some point? Or were you trying to do that? Were you thinking about it?
Oh,
wait,
right.
Is this still going on or remember?
I'd originally looked at doing volunteer firefighter, and then that I at some point when I do have the time.
You
I
didn't commit to something, Chris?
But I did take the community emergency response team training, so I am a level 1 CERT member.
Okay, yeah, I remember this.
Yes, yeah. So I do have that, and I will still occasionally go to the meetings and take part when they need people at different trainings or simulations or things like that. But that's another one where I kind of wish I had the time, because it would be one that I would want to have a little more time into, but not enough hours in the day.
Are we crazy for trying to stay so busy? Like, and I'm saying this knowing that I only mention sparingly what I do, because I'm trying to interview you. But because you're one of my best friends, we can talk about this.
I'll tell you what, man. Idle hands. Idle hands make me nervous. So keeping myself busy, I know that I've got something to do. I'm not just sitting. I'm not, you know.
You know, there's video games and internet, though. That's
well, yes,
so nice.
And I still do plenty of that, you know. I think I happen to open Steam up today to update it, and I think that I've got 330 hours on Towns.
Wait, which one's that one? I don't know. I don't think
it's
played that one yet.
Like, it's kind of like Minecraft, but not really. So the idea is that whenever you're playing a game of some sort, you're always playing as the hero, but you never see these communities around the hero that support that hero when they're there. So the whole idea is that you're building a town where you have townspeople that have to do things like make your food, build your utilities and your weapons and farm and all of this stuff that needs to go on. And then once you have a high enough population and they're happy enough, heroes will show up into your town, and then you can dig into the dungeons, and the heroes will clear the dungeons, giving you more cool stuff and giving them more cool stuff. But it's like, you know, it essentially becomes
another game I'll have to put in the backlog.
Yeah, and it essentially becomes a town management game. How can you best get everything working so that you can have them clearing dungeons at the same time that the food production's okay and that you're keeping your heroes in good armor and all that type of stuff. So it's a fun one.
Speaking of games, the other thing, and the most important thing, because this is what I'm going to wrangle you into all this, is that when and how did you get so involved in tabletop games?
Oh my gosh.
Well, board games, tabletop games, and trying to build your own custom TB, wait.
Table, yeah.
No, I was trying to the initials for the game.
TI3,
yeah.
Yes.
Which, by the way, I can't wait to play that again.
I know. I had almost contemplated if we wanted to try and do the two-player version while we were doing the podcast, but I was like, we wouldn't have worked.
We would bored to tears, everyone is listening.
Right. Placing command counters. Like,
check.
It's yawning. But quite a while back, still during undergrad, Nick Jacobson was the one that originally got me into it. He introduced me. We were over at their house playing a game of Settlers and had a lot of fun. And I was like, oh, you know, I've never really played anything like this.
Which is now blown up thanks to
right.
thanks to NFL.
At the time, it was like, what is this? But I enjoyed playing, and I guess I seemed like I was excited. He was like, well, I think I may have another one you want to play. And it's like, the next time that we're going
to
play...
You're crazy, just crazy enough to do the other game we're talking about.
So then he invited me over, and the very first game that I played of Twilight Imperium 3, we were playing an 8-player game. And it was one of them where, like, they gave me my pieces, they just gave me a race, they weren't even going to mess with me. Here's your race, here's your pieces, try not to die.
Boom, out the door.
But it was so much fun. It was just, I usually try and blame it on the fact that I'm an accountant, is that I just love the minute details that are in a game like that. And I like the long time, the long term strategy that has to take place with determining what move is going to affect three or four moves based on what else is going on the board and all of that type of stuff. And so I ended up playing a few more times with Nick, and then there was kind of a gap where I really didn't play again for a while. And then I don't really know what re-sparked it about, I guess it was probably 2 years ago. I'm not sure what re-sparked it, but all of a sudden it was like, you know, I need this game again. And so I bought the base game directly off the Fantasy Flight website, and then I bought the two expansions off of Amazon or something like that. And the expansions got here before the base game did, and I already had them punched, and like I'm messing with the pieces and looking through cards before the base game even got here. And then, you know, we played. I brought it over to your house before your party. We played, and we probably played three times that month, didn't we? And then at the third game, we said, we're not going to do this again for a while.
I don't think I participated more than that one during that month. Maybe I did another one, but I only remember the one we played at my house. Because after that,
but I know there was some point that you and I both played twice in 1 month, and you were like, okay, we need a break now.
Well, it had to be that time, because every other time we've played, I think it was here. I don't think I've played it since that first time at my place. Mm-hmm. I've only played the game here.
We must have played at your house and then here in the same month, because then it was like we aren't going to do this again.
It's not that it wasn't fun, but it's the same thing we learned with Cards Against Humanity. We can't play it every time we get together.
Right, or right.
It's going to stale.
Yeah. So but then after that, and I was starting to get more into it, and I got a Board Game Geek account, and I was looking at all the different stuff, I decided that I wanted to make a custom version of the game. And so what that was...
Holograms?
That would be awesome.
You mean no holograms?
Maybe down the future. Once we get the HoloLens from Microsoft.
Okay. Yeah. Good idea.
But what it was really going to come down to was I was going to buy a whole second set of the game. So meaning base and both expansions. And then either online or somewhere else, I was going to find another two sets of ships so that I could have a set of ships for every single race in the game. And then I would paint each and every set separately for that race so that each race literally had its own ships and then would come in a box that had the logo and all the cards and all the stuff that was going to have to go with
it. Here's the box of your race. Here you go.
Yes. Right.
So as far as I know, you've been doing this for about a year. How far along are you in this endeavor?
I have completely... So I've got a little detailing tool to be able to sort of like... When you take the pieces off the sprue, mm-hmm. where it's got the little edging that you can see...
I didn't even know it was called a sprue.
There you go.
I learned something today.
The more you know.
If I had the sound effect, I would play it, but you overestimate my set of there.
But, so...
Maybe I have a reggaeton horn somewhere, but I can't...
Yeah, there you go. So for both full sets of everything, meaning 16 sets of the ships, I've completely sanded down all of the outside edges of where they came off the sprues so that everything is even and clean around all of the edges of the ships, including, because it was sort of the molding piece on it, if there was extra edging around the outside, I've pretty much sanded all of that down as well. As far as painting, I haven't started painting any of those ships yet because I'm incredibly nervous to do that until I get a little bit better with my painting skills.
Like, you don't want to ruin it or like a month down the line, oh, you still look so good.
Right, right.
Or even worse, like if like in the you paint the first race and you get progressively better, so that the last ones you paint are way better than the first ones you paint. You go,
right. I'd like them to all at least be reasonably the same. Except maybe the Lazix. The Lazix could be a little better.
You went from kindergarten to like Picasso, or at the very end, it's like.
But I mean, it's getting better. I bought some Citadel paints that I've been trying to mess around with and play with. Anybody that does any painting will know that those are decent paints. But when I first started, I just went to Michael's and just like was looking at the paints and was like, cool, acrylic, like just grabbed them. And the very first ones I did just looked like shit. They were terrible. They just awful. And then I also learned, when it's all said and done, if people are going to be handling these and everything, I can't just paint them. I was also going to need to do like the polyurethane coat over the outside of them.
So okay, now
like
explain that to me.
So I'm going to grab a ship really quickly because I painted one with the polyurethane on top and didn't on the bottom. And you can see the difference.
Okay. All right, so he walked away, narrating now. He's going to his garage. I'm no longer interviewing anybody because he walked away. All right, I'm going to his garage. I'll play some music at this point, like elevator music.
Still narrating.
Just a little bit. I'm going to add elevator music to this part, I think.
Maybe okay, nice. Okay. So, look at the way that the top of this one is as far as like how the shine looks and everything, and then flip it over.
Visual presentation brought to you audio podcast. Okay, so the top is what?
So the top just has a generic acrylic paint where it's got a blue base coat, and then I've done a little bit of accent painting with a gray just to sort of bring out the edges of the ship and things like that.
Okay, so no, complete ignorant on what the other side is going to be, and not that I even know what this is supposed to be at all.
Yes.
From pure memory.
Yeah,
this so looks then, like it's a ship that like. You know, you can tell it's aged. Maybe it's seen a battle or two.
Yes, yeah.
If
worn.
If you were going for that aesthetic.
Yes.
Okay, now I'll do the flip. Or what did they say on the house show where they move that bus? Flip that. Oh, okay, I see.
So you see how it's got that sort of matte look to it?
Oh, yeah. Well, you're not done painting it, I think, right? Or is it supposed to be all blue?
This one was just a test. I just wanted to see what the polyurethane would look like on it, so I only did the top. So you've kind of got the slick look to the top as opposed to just sort of the not-so-slick look on the bottom. And the bottom, because it doesn't have that on it, isn't going to last as long. So I'm going to have to polyurethane all of the ships so that they'll survive more than one game without it starting to chip off.
How are you learning all this stuff? Because you're an accountant. What do you think?
Thank God for Board Game Geek. There's anything and everything on that website, yeah. But yeah, that and just messing with it. I mean, this one is probably my favorite ship that I've done so far. Where it's got, like, I can't remember the term. I believe it's inking. But the base coat was almost like a deep burgundy. And then I had a coat that took a black mixed with a little bit of the burgundy and then watered it down very heavily and then sort of did sliding coats across the ship. And so that's where you sort of get those shadows and where
sliding
it's
coats? What does that mean?
It's sort of where it's just dragging across the ship, not necessarily trying to get down into the details, but just like a light drag across the top of the ship. So it'll just kind of spill down.
Okay, because I do like how this one turned out. Do you mean to in the future to add more detail than just the one base of paint?
No, it's well over 700 pieces that are going to have to be painted. So they're all going to be a base coat and then a little bit of sort of accent painting just to bring out features on the ship.
But
I mean, if I wanted to spend the next like 10 to 15 years working on it, I could probably detail every single ship down to like putting a guy in a window kind of thing, but... My eyes
will be
already
60.
Going bad.
Chris is finally done with his custom set. Let's go.
Now we said we can't play with it.
We're retired and we have time. We can actually play this game. We can actually spend a whole day doing it. Instead of having like playing 3 months in advance.
Right.
Obviously no one knows this, but explanation to everyone out there. We actually have like very structured emails about when's the next time we can play. Okay, everyone, would you be okay with this time? Okay, no.
We have doodle polls. We have doodle polls to try and play a board game.
Which I think it helps add to the uniqueness of everything. Like that we make special time for it.
Yes,
it adds to the experience, I think, for somehow.
Yeah,
and again, it keeps us from overdoing it. Because this is if we were not careful, if we were just, you know, a glutton for punishment, we could probably play this like 5 weekends in a row and then never touch it again.
Right, yeah.
Like never again.
Or like the idea that we've got to play the Total Annihilation game that would take 3 days.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You've looked up, I guess, through Board Game Geek. That's what it's called, right? I didn't just get that wrong. I've gotten a lot of things wrong today, so.
No, you're good on that one.
So, because you're looking at alternate ways of play for this.
So, it's actually not even looking up. Along with my coworker, Matt, we've actually been building a couple of custom scenarios.
Oh, really?
So, play. Yeah.
Straight from your brain?
Yeah, so one of them that we've been working on is called the Soul Galaxy scenario, where you have two separate pods of area on the map where everybody is located, and then there's a separate piece of board off to the side that has all of the planets of our solar system. So from the sun all the way out to Pluto and then the Kuiper asteroid.
Pluto's not a planet, Chris.
Well, it's a planet in mine. Oh, okay. So
I'm just, you know, according to the reports, you'd also have to include 27 other objects if you include Pluto.
Sure.
Come on, Chris.
Kuiper Belt will cover all of that.
You mean your game isn't realistic? That's what I'm hearing now.
But so the idea of the scenario will be, you've essentially got two different teams. There was a three-player scenario where you're just playing by yourselves, so it's just three different teams. Or there's a six-player scenario where it's either two teams of three or three teams of two, and you're trying to take Earth. But Earth is a sentient race, so as you're playing the game and people are getting closer to Earth, but nobody's tried to attack it, the forces continue to grow on the planet as if they're gaining in technology and they're doing those types of things. So the whole idea, though, is the first group to get through the solar system and be able to take the planet.
So you basically want to be every sci-fi movie enemy. What if we were the enemy in every sci-fi movie? What would that look like?
This. And then the
second... Does that mean we all lose in the end? Like, we all turns out that we can't listen to polka music without our heads exploding? Or we don't like water, or we contract the flu and we all die.
Sure, however you want to do it.
Is that like a special card? Like, oh no, you didn't conquer Earth yet. There's the what if scenario card.
Or they get too close to the sun, and then it turns out that they don't have whatever they need in their body to be able to take that.
They're reverse Superman.
Sure. Yes. As I'm sure is frequently referenced.
Reverse Superman. Don't you know this?
And then the second scenario is just one. It's not even really a scenario. It's just a variation on play where instead of playing for victory points like we would normally play, it's until there's only one person left on the board. And so it's just total annihilation.
So that one will take us about a quarter, right?
It's, yeah, no joke.
A few months. Right? You know, I'll camp out here, quit my job.
Truly, that's why I would love to build the gaming table, is because we could actually play a game like that over the course of like half a year. Because I could just leave it in the garage, and then when we want to play, I'll just bring it back in the house.
Oh, man, and that's just one game. I mean, and I know you've been introducing the group to a bunch of... first, some Kickstarter games, and then and like some other random ones that we find.
Yes, yes.
And then the Exploding Kittens. Is that what? That's the actual name of the game, right?
Like yes, yeah. Kittens? That just got backed 2 days ago.
I got so distracted I didn't even participate in time.
Yeah, so that's all right.
Did you get
the
not safe for work version?
I did, yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. Yeah, there was no way I was not going to get the not safe for work.
Because that was what I was thinking I was going to buy. I was like, oh, we should totally do this. I would have even suggested that if you hadn't participated already, we could go halfsies on like the next one. Because I was like thinking about like, well, the next one looks pretty good too. We should just go halfsies.
Right, right. Ooh, we could do that.
It's too late. Ugh, dang it.
Gosh. And then just last week, very, very unfortunately for myself, I found out about the trade ability that's on Board Game Geek. That website.
Right.
So one of the, and I meant that sarcastically. It's wonderful, but it means that I'm going to be sending shit all over the country constantly now.
more so.
Right. There's a feature on there where, well, within Board Game Geek itself, you can put your entire board game collection on there. What you own, things you've pre-ordered, things you want, things you're willing to trade out of your collection, those types of things. And there's a trade function on there where you can say, I have this, I'm willing to trade, this is what I want in trade, and it will find people on the website that are willing to do that with you.
And like, we're talking about permanent trades or like temporary
trades?
Permanent
trades.
So that wouldn't be bad.
So like, did you ever see the Ground Floor game?
No,
I had? No. No, you're building skyscrapers, and I thought, I've had it for a year and a half, I've never played it, and I've hit the point where I'm like, yeah, I'm probably not going to play this. So I had that one on there, and there's a war game that I would really like called Memoir 44, where it's a, I get, I've had multiple people say it's kind of an intro to wargaming, like as far as troop movement.
Like the 40Ks?
Kinda, yeah. And so I went on there and I just said, you know, Ground Floor, Memoir 44, and there were like 9 people on that website that were willing to take Ground Floor and give me a copy of Memoir 44.
Like, okay.
Cool.
Wow, when did they think of this concept before?
It's like this weird eBay on the website.
How do we still have swap meets open? The internet should have just closed them all down by now. They have really good random food. I don't know if you've been to one in a long time.
Oh, they're so good.
Just like, that's what keeps them open.
Yes, the deep fried butter sandwich.
Oh, and I just totally lost what I was going to say. Which is really great to do on a podcast, by the way. This is totally 101. You know, forgetting what you're forgetting your line. Line. Yeah. Oh, see, this is the kind of stuff I need to coax you into participating, because like, between you and when I go to GDC, I've like, there's other board games. There's more than like Monopoly and Life.
Yes.
And then the one where you smack the boggle in the middle of the...
Right.
There's more.
Well, and then all the micro games that I've been showing.
There's those too. Jeez.
Which, that's the funniest thing of all of it. I'm probably up to 5 different micro games now. And they get more play than any of my other games do, because since I carry them in my pocket, if Matt and I go to lunch or something, we'll just play one while we're at lunch. And we can get it done in like 15 minutes. So they get more play time than any of the other games that I have.
But that's what they're for, like your cell phone games.
Right.
It's the cell phone games of the tabletop.
Yes. It's the analog version of cell phone games.
Only Candy Crush isn't taking all your money every time you play.
True, very true.
Which is good.
Yeah, I guess unless we started gambling on it, we could do that.
That's how we fund our workshop.
That's it. We did it.
One day we'll get that up. I know we have like 10 different ideas on the table of how we're going to get that doing.
Oh,
one of those has got to work.
Yes, at some point we'll figure
something. Did you get my message the other day about the other idea?
I did, yes.
Is that unethical?
I don't think it's unethical.
Okay,
but
good.
I think we would want to wait and see what actually happened.
Because I was writing that down. I was like, because I heard about it the other day that like my companies in Seattle and Colorado are doing so well that now they like there's market.
Also a lot of risk though, because they have to work entirely in cash.
Yeah.
For now. Yes, for now. Until that credit union finally gets passed.
Yeah. But, well, because the idea behind that was that the idea, well, I honestly don't know how hard or easy it was for these companies to pop up, but it sounds like the ones that made it up are pretty successful as long as they have a good plan. Mm-hmm. You and I can make a good plan.
Yes.
And then we just find someone who has the product. someone's Mexican, you know, college people, we gotta find someone.
And figure something out.
Someone already established and then our mostly clean noses can be the face.
Sure.
Business plans.
We can plan anything. What was the one that we did? Oh my gosh, it was the Deliver a Stripper. Do you remember that one?
I'm not part of this. I don't know. We came up with this?
You don't remember that one?
No, the only other one I remember talking to you about was Jiminy. When did we talk about mail order strippers?
No. It was just like a side conversation. We were talking about delivery businesses because it was right as all of those like food delivery, like
refresh my memory because it started a little familiar, but I can't place it.
Where it was never anything that we were actually going to do, but we were talking.
If any of my Sunday school kids are listening, I don't condone this. This is a business scenario case study. Continue.
The whole scenario was, let's say that you had some need, God only knows what need,
yeah,
but some need that you can't go to the strippers. The strippers need to come to you.
I thought we were trying to be vague.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
That was the guideline for it, that you had a service that you weren't able to go to, and it needed to come to you, and so how would that be feasible? And those brand new Mercedes vans had just come out, and they're like, we could definitely fit what we need in there. And it was one of those just like joking hypotheticals. But of course,
seriously though,
of course, when we're talking on Google Talk, it didn't stay theoretical. We got down to the point of like, well, where are we going to get money for a van?
Well, that's what it always comes down to, because theoretical isn't fun. I mean, if we were going to do that, I would have been a physicist.
Right.
I'm a computer programmer. Anything I think of, I should be able to put on a computer and then come up with. That's what I became an adult for, to make things come true.
Right.
Seriously, dude, I don't remember us talking about this. That might just be more of a factor of how many times we've gone over this kind of conversation.
Seriously, we have so many of those kind of talks.
I am blanking on that. That all being said, now that I'm in the MBA program, there's also... I have to finish this at some point soon. There's open spots in the McGuire Entrepreneurship Program.
Oh, nice, nice.
And I was like, you're going to do that? I've been trying to start a business, quote unquote, for like years.
Right, and because you actually have to create a product by the end of that program.
Or at least the business plan, actually.
Okay.
The way I say it is that the business plan is what ends up needing to happen. And a good amount of them turn out to be actual things that people go on to do.
Okay.
Like Park Genius apparently came out of this. I didn't know that. That's awesome. I know that what that is. So I was like, yeah. When they said that, I was like, yeah. Maybe this is my chance to put out Jiminy. Because we couldn't do that before. That's going to be the idea that I presented to the people in the full legitimacy of like, I want you to try this.
Nice.
Which I won't go into detail so that my fellow listeners don't
yes.
get the idea.
Yeah. Right. Any discussion and listening is hereby
copyright. And... So, and if not that, hopefully something, because I would love to do that.
Talia, we need the money to open a wing place on University, because there's a vacancy down there, but we need money.
See, what we were talking about, a workshop, a community media studio that nonprofits can use. We talked about Jiminy. We talked about
the
wing place. We talked about streetlights and like three incarnations of what that could be.
Right. We had so many different ones for that.
That's
one.
Gonna happen.
It basically became a three-ring circus by the end of it. We had everything in one building.
Oh, that's what it needs to be. That's the dream. I'm going to make that happen one day. Though the pool hall sounds like maybe it could be like streetlights light.
Light, yeah.
Streetlights light. Streetlights squared.
Well, it could just be streetlights, and then the real one will be streetlights plus.
That's not actually not a bad name. I don't know if it should be or shouldn't be. Welcome to streetlights. No. I don't know if that rings out the tongue anymore.
Well, if it's a bar, they're not going to say welcome to streetlights plus every time they come in.
CLP.
Unless it's going to be like a black tie bar where there's a guy at the door when they come in.
No. We definitely want untied.
Yes. We're getting down into details again.
Okay, well, with that, I mean, we've already been talking for an hour. More than an hour, by the way.
Holy crap.
That's the nice thing about this, is that once we get going, it's easy to just go on and on and on.
Right.
Which has actually been a problem, because I've gone over time with, like, the last three interviews. It's like, okay, it's an hour.
Well, that's good.
I don't want it to be too long.
And then you got time. Then you got stuff you can cut down. Just
I never
take stuff out of there.
I never edit. I edited it once. Once I had to edit because someone told me something that they were legally not allowed to tell me. And they're like, oh, wait. Yeah, never mind that.
That has to be out of there.
And it took me, like the whole, like, from beginning to end, it takes me, like once this is recorded,
mm-hmm.
The time it takes me to like record the intro and then put the pieces together that I want, like 20, 25 minutes. When I had to do the editing job, there's like another 15 minutes on top of it because it's Audacity.
Yes, Audacity.
Audacity, because yeah. I'm getting the names wrong. That's the theme.
I used to use Audacity. I know what you're talking about.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's that I should probably take a legitimate training video on how to use it. But it's like, I can't cut it. Why do I cut it when it automatically disappears? Can I just drag and drop? This isn't like Adobe Premiere. What's going on?
So
yeah. I need an adult.
So, I mean, besides that, man, I mean, anything else worth sharing? Anything else cool going on? Before I make you talk for the rest of the year, once I'm done with taxes and I can hunt you down?
Right. Well, the National Collegiate Leadership Conference, we had something interesting happen this year.
Oh.
That you and I talked about a little bit earlier, but we didn't really get to the headway of it. One of the current conference chairs and I were having a discussion just outside the union, and I've been a part in one form or fashion of this conference for 7 years as of this year.
Didn't it start while you and I were in college, or did it start before
that? It did, because I participated for 1 year and I did participation and volunteering, and then after that I volunteered and presented for 6 years. And it's one of those weird things where it's not the same committee that puts it on every year. It's not the same volunteers. It's not the same people.
We should note that this is an incredibly unique experience that doesn't exist in many other forms and many other places in the country.
Yes.
I don't know if you're sure globally. You probably know the stats on that. But
no idea. But in 7 years of doing it, it just kind of came up of the discussion of, why am I here? Why are you here? Why does this committee do this? Why do these volunteers do this? One of those types of things. Because it's a conference of 600 to 700 college students that are all there to gain leadership skills to take back to their own organizations to be able to do that. And it's not like they're just being preached at by staff. Students are doing some of these workshops. Getting up in front of their fellow peers and passing on knowledge that they have for others to take back to their campuses. And so what it boiled down to for those of us that volunteer and that type of thing was that when we're there at that conference, we never take back anything bad. No one ever remembers anything bad that happened at that conference. It's always when somebody helped you and it made your experience better at that conference, or the feeling of knowing that you helped somebody else in order to make that conference better for them. And so that was, in 7 years of doing it, that was just kind of like the, we solved it.
All right, everybody, go home. Last conference.
We did it. We're done.
Spread the word. Put it on a website. I mean, I don't even think I've ever participated. I just that I've known of because like vicariously experienced it through you and everyone else that I know that goes to that conference. But so the only way I can relate that is my work at GDC, which is the staff that or the volunteers that of us that go there and help put on the show, is that same feeling. Like, okay, yeah, we're here to not only make the best experience for those who are participating, but just so we end up making an incredible experience for each other by what we share the entire time.
And the main reason that I even brought that up, that kind of headways back into all of the stuff that we had already discussed, that holds true across any of those different items, is that it's not, we may have difficult patches in any of the things that we do, but we always remember when we've been able to help with something or when somebody else has helped to make it easier for us or those types of things. And so that continues to drive that involvement.
I love you, Chris.
Me too, Eddie.
Thank God we met in Blue Chip.
Yes.
I'll have no regrets. If I had regrets, if there's anything that could possibly exist, it would all be eliminated by the fact that I at least met you there, man. There are none. If anyone was curious or wondering or worried. It was supposed to be a compliment that could be construed otherwise.
Yes.
He was great, I swear. I love it. Oh, now I'm going to have to backpedal this for the rest of my life. Ugh.
Well, there's going to be enough people at the wedding that we'll all just have to stand in a circle and do a video where it's just like, blue chip. Oh!
Yeah, every wedding now is in between it and you all is going to be a blue chip reunion.
Seriously.
I'm okay with this.
Yes, that's all right.
All right. Chris, thanks for being on my podcast, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And adios, everybody.
This has been a presentation of Front Row Geeks. Adios.